find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
Good morning. It's 8 a.m. I'm Luke Mathers, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Public officials are calling for an end to senseless gun violence after a shooting that left several injured following the Juneteenth celebrations in Milwaukee yesterday. Stuart J. Waddles reports.
Six teenagers were injured when shots were fired after a fight between two girls. Milwaukee Police Chief Jeffrey Norman says those injured include four girls and two boys, all between the ages of 14 and 19.
This is a serious situation that we all need to take hold of. This is not a Milwaukee Police Department thing, not the mayor's thing, not just only community organizers. It's a us thing.
Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson said it's unacceptable that kids can have access to any kind of gun. A 17-year-old is in custody for the non-fatal shooting. Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media News.
There's a proposal making its way through the state legislature to change the way the Wisconsin Technical College system is funded. Terry Bell with more.
Under the proposal, local technical college boards would no longer levy property taxes. Instead, all future tax funding would go through the state budget. Richard Barnhouse is president of Waukesha County Technical College. He says he does not want technical college boards to lose local control.
The way the tax levy is set up really ensures that we are always accountable. Our taxpayers know it. They question me about it all the time. So do our businesses. And that keeps us focused in Waukesha County, because what matters to us locally is what drives the technical college system.
The proposal is part of an amendment to a bill that goes to the assembly floor tomorrow. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
One in five teenagers in the U.S. will experience a mental health challenge before they turn 18, but 64% of them won't ask for help. Betsy Mulgano is a mental health advocate. She encourages school districts to offer mental health first aid training for teens.
It helps arm kids with the tools that they need to not only help themselves understand what's going on in their own lives and what they might be dealing with, but also to be on the lookout for what might be going on with their friends and help build a stronger community.
There's free information at mentalhealthfirstaid.org, a new battle over federal protections for life-saving care. When lawmakers met into the middle of the night last week voting on what provisions to include in the next two-year budget, the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee voted to bar transgender Wisconsinites on Badger Care from using their coverage for puberty blockers or gender-affirming surgery. A 2019 ruling by a federal judge determined Wisconsin healthcare providers could not deny individuals covered by Medicaid seeking gender-affirming care, something the judge ruled was protected under federal healthcare law and civil rights. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Luke Mathers, Civic Media News. Time is 8:03.
Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. Good morning, I'm Jimmy Cuska. A man accused of shooting multiple people in downtown La Crosse early Saturday morning is being held on a $1 million bail, according to online court records. 31-year-old DeAndre Grant is charged with six counts of reckless attempted homicide with the use of a dangerous weapon after La Crosse police said he fired a gun from a vehicle, shooting and injuring six people early Saturday morning. One person is dead and two people are hurt after a UTV crash in Pepin County. The crash happened west of Durand in the town of Waterville around 9 o'clock Sunday night. 45-year-old Jessica Bignell of Arkansas was killed in the crash, while a 47-year-old man and a 54-year-old man were hurt. The Pepin County Sheriff's Department said that the UTV hit a patch of gravel on County Road Z before overturning and noted that the roadway was closed for construction. And Hutchinson Technology will lay off 50 additional employees as part of a reduction in force later this year. In March, the company announced 237 layoffs. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The Brewers get shelled in the first. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens. With sports, last night the Brewers opened up their series at home against the Arizona Diamondbacks with one of the worst performances in a single inning by starting pitcher Corbin Burns. Top of the first in front of 24,000 at AmFam Field on Bally Sports.
Welcome back, Alec Thomas. Fly ball to right field, and there it goes. Alec Thomas, one swing back from AAA. And it's 6-0 Diamondbacks against Corbin Burns in the first.
6-0 and Arizona never looked back. The final, the Diamondbacks 9, the Brewers 1. Diamondbacks manager Torrey Lovello told his players swing at Corbin Burns' first pitch.
I know that he's putting the ball on the plate, and that's usually his MO. He's going to, it's power stuff. And without giving away a strategy, I think it's fairly obvious our guys are ready to hit first pitch on.
in a quiet Brewers clubhouse. Burns admitted his cutter wasn't cutting it.
They were like that the last time we played them. They came out, they swing the bats. That's the reason why we were able to go kind of deep in that game last time we faced them. So we knew that we'd come out swinging. And just didn't execute early in that first inning. You know, two pitches in, we had second and third, whoever it was. But you know, really the first three hitters kind of changed that game for me. Obviously, his first three of the game, but two non-executed cutters and then the walk, and then they were rolling.
Craig Counsell.
There's pitch qualities to it that make it a great pitch, but you still have to execute pitches and throw it in good spots and get into good counts, and you know, all those things add up collectively. And their approach was, you know, starting out the game was good. They got two pitches in the middle plate, and then they hit them hard.
So the Brewers fall into second place in the NL Central, a half game behind Cincinnati. The Reds have won 9 in a row and moved into first place after beating the Rockies 5-4. College football, the Badgers pick up a defensive back, Jay Harper from Alabama, has committed to Wisconsin. NBA, Mike Budenholzer is a candidate for the 76ers job, the former Milwaukee Bucks head coach selling his Lake Okeechee home for $7 million. And that's sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Welcome to the Stu Daniels Show. I'm your host, Stu Daniels. Thank you for tuning in today. Hope your day is going well so far. It's a Tuesday morning at 7 minutes after 8 o'clock right now. It's the 20th day of June. And outside today for Western Wisconsin, going to be sunny with highs near 90 degrees in most places. And in sports, the Brewers lost to the Diamondbacks last night, 9-1 down in Milwaukee. They dropped down to second place now because the Cincinnati Reds won their 9th game in a row last night, and they're now in first place. Man, where in the heck did they come from? The Brewers play the Diamondbacks again tonight in the second of that 3-game series. And on this date, in 1975, the movie Jaws was released in theaters. Of course, it was one of the biggest summer blockbusters of all time up to that point, and probably still so today, I would guess. And birthdays today, born in 1953, Cyndi Lauper. You remember her from the 1980s and MTV? And Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Also born on this date in 1910. In West Point, Mississippi, Howlin' Wolf, one of the great blues singers of all time. Spoonful, Smokestack Lightning, Killin' Floor, Backdoor Man. Many of those songs of his were taken by rock and roll bands and made into rock and roll songs. And in the headlines today, Republican lawmakers want to change the way Wisconsin's technical colleges are funded. Also, two drivers died over the weekend in Milwaukee after one of them got on I-94 headed in the wrong direction. And that's something that makes me scratch my head, because I've been around for quite a few years, and up until about 25 years ago or so, give or take, yeah, I never heard of anybody ever driving the wrong way on the highway. I don't think it was something that happened very often, if ever, until about 25 years ago. And now it seems like it's a thing, and it happens quite a bit. And a lot of people have been killed or injured over the past 20 or 25 years from people getting on the highway and going in the wrong direction. And why is that? How did that happen? What changed? Did something change from the 1960s and 70s and 80s and 90s? And then once we got into the 21st century, It's like all of a sudden people started getting on the highway going in the wrong direction. We had people drinking and driving before. I don't know. Maybe I can't imagine what happened. If you have any clues, let me know. You can call in. The phone number is 715-388-7155. I'd be interested to hear what your take is on that, because I have no idea what changed and why it's so prevalent these days. Also, a federal judge says an oil pipeline that crosses tribal land in northern Wisconsin must shut down in the next 3 years. Also, billions of dollars are on the way for infrastructure improvement across the country, but will small towns get their fair share? That's something we're going to look into today. But the first story I want to get to is this one about technical colleges. You know, Wisconsin's always been a leader in technical colleges, making sure that every community of 5,000 people or more had a good technical college that people could go to, learn a trade, and make money out in the workforce. And it seemed to have been going okay, but now there is a move to change the way that we fund our technical colleges in Wisconsin. And I don't know if it's the right thing to do or not. What do you think? Let me know. This headline from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this was posted yesterday, says Republicans propose funding overhaul for technical colleges, stripping away taxing authority. Wisconsin technical colleges would lose their taxing authority and depend more heavily on state funding under an amended bill approved during a legislative meeting or a committee last Thursday. The state technical college system and the 16 technical college districts oppose Assembly Bill 2 as amended, which was introduced and passed along party lines by the Assembly Committee on Ways and Means without public testimony. It now heads to the Assembly floor for a vote scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday. And under this proposal, technical colleges would not lose funding, but the state would have more control of their purse strings. Colleges would retain their taxing authority for building projects, but lose their ability to go to referendum for operating costs. And then beginning in 2023-24, which is next school year, colleges would receive state aid equal to the amount they received through their tax levy in the year before, plus any changes in property values. So, was there a problem? Is there an issue with the way things have been funded? It didn't seem like it, but evidently Republicans want to change things. And here's a, it says Representative Sue Conley from Janesville, the ranking minority member of the committee, questioned if the language would protect technical colleges from future cuts. Anytime you take away authority in place, it makes me wonder what the end game is, she said. Wisconsin was the first state in the United States to establish a system of technical colleges. It says here that the 1911 legislation provided state funding and required every community of 5,000 or more to establish a local board with taxing authority. And losing local control would reduce our accountability and responsiveness to our local community and employer partners, technical college system president Morna Foy said in a statement. And for example, if a big company or a new industry moves into the area, the local college board can respond to changing workforce needs by adding programs and hiring more faculty. That makes sense, right? Close to half of the technical college systems $1.2 billion in operating revenue already comes from state aid, according to data from 2021-22. Another 21%, or $248 million, come from local property taxes. And then the remaining 18% comes from tuition and fees. So I don't know if that's a good way to go. What do you think? It would be interesting to see what's going to happen there. I don't know. Why change something if it's If it's not broke, don't fix it, right? Anyway, the other thing I wanted to get to today was this story from the Journal Sentinel discussing water issues. Okay. Billions of dollars are on the way for infrastructure improvement across the country, but will small towns get their fair share? Hey, Aaron, have you ever heard of a town called Luck, Wisconsin?
I don't think that I have.
Small town, I guess it's about 30 minutes north of Amory, which is one of the places Civic Media has a radio station. So people in Luck, Wisconsin might be listening to this show right now. But this headline from the USA Today Network says, with billions on the table for water infrastructure, small communities risk being left out to dry. And it says here, Seth Peterson was at his grandmother's funeral and his phone wouldn't stop ringing. 3 hours away in the village of Luck, Wisconsin, where he served as director of public works, there was an emergency. Peterson was getting calls repeatedly asking for his expertise. Peterson and two other employees were responsible for drinking water, wastewater, street maintenance, park and cemetery maintenance, and picking up stray dogs, he said. The job never stopped. Quote, Seth, what the expletive are you doing? His brother-in-law said to him as he came back to the family gathering from another call. Why are you living like this? Peterson left that job at the end of last year. Now he helps to train water operators in small communities for the Wisconsin Rural Water Association. And it says here that Luck is not an outlier. In small and rural communities across the U.S., water system operators are stretched thin, covering around-the-clock responsibilities to keep water running safely and reliably, despite aging and underfunded infrastructure. The consequences of a water system falling behind have received the national spotlight, infamously, in Flint, Michigan, and most recently in Jackson, Mississippi, where majority Black communities bore the brunt of mismanagement and aging infrastructure. Thousands of under-resourced systems risk a similar fate, and small water systems, defined by the EPA as serving fewer than 10,000 people and making up more than 90% of the nation's community water systems, are in a particularly precarious position. Their staffing is often sparse and underpaid. Infrastructure in many places is crumbling and underfunded. And though there is a fresh infusion of federal money on the table, it's a challenge to access. We'll talk about the American Rescue Plan and the infrastructure law in just a second. Stick around. You're tuned in to your Civic Media radio station.
Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. Trained counselors are here to support anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. You can also contact 988 if you are concerned about someone. 988 is confidential and free to all Wisconsin residents. 988, 24/7. Call, text, chat. Here to support you. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
One call can do it all. Your business business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
Hello, Chippewa Valley and 93.5 The Tap listeners. Civic Media is thrilled to be your new neighbor. And to celebrate our arrival, we have an exclusive offer just for you and your local business. Be one of the first 10 callers right now, and you'll receive 1 month of free advertising. That's right, 1 month of free advertising. This incredible offer ends June 30th. Boost your business and secure your free month of advertising right now. Call 608-949-8989. 608-949-8989. Call now.
Apple pie, fireworks, parades, red, white, and blue. Civic Media loves 4th of July, and we hope you do too. Would your business benefit from reaching hundreds of thousands of radio listeners? Show your American pride by helping sponsor radio promos, celebrating Independence Day, listing safe fireworks displays, and honoring military veterans. If your business would like to be involved...
We have a sunny, warm week coming up this week. In fact, we're not expecting to see much in the way of rain until at least Saturday night, possibly into Sunday. Today, mostly sunny. We'll get to about 89 for a high this afternoon. The wind southeast at 5 to 15. Basically the same each day this week. 61 clear tonight, 90 tomorrow, 88 on Thursday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 71.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Fancy pick in there, Chet Atkins, who was born on this date. And what did you say, Aaron, back in 1924 or something?
Yes, 1924.
Man, that guy had a long career. And it wasn't that long ago that he passed, what, 10 or 20 years ago or so?
Yes, but, it was 2001.
2001, you said? Yeah. Yeah, and he had a unique style and was a big influence on a lot of guitarists, including some rock and roll guitarists. I remember Mark Knopfler used to say that Chet Atkins was a big influence on him. Hey, just before the break, or by the way, welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Stu Daniels Show. And just before the break, we were discussing water, clean water in communities across the country. Thousands of under-resourced water systems across the country may not get the money that they need to make improvements. You know, we've got the big infrastructure law with money on the way for municipalities across the country. Also, the American Rescue Plan Act had money in it for water infrastructure, billions and billions of dollars. And more than 90% of the nation's community water systems are small water systems serving fewer than 10,000 people. And there's some serious concern that smaller communities may not get the kind of money they need to upgrade their water systems. And we were checking out a story here from the USA Today Network. And we left off here where it says the American Rescue Plan Act, bipartisan infrastructure law, and other programs represent an historic investment in the country's water infrastructure, totaling billions of dollars. But the total available funding, even after it's all been doled out, still won't be enough. One report from 2020 estimated that the U.S. would need to invest nearly $3.3 trillion in water and wastewater infrastructure projects between 2019 and 2039. To keep systems updated. Many communities will also face increases in their water bills to keep up with infrastructure and staffing needs.
Yet raising the price of water may prove unworkable in rural and historically underinvested communities like Appalachia and the Mississippi Delta, some of the most impoverished in the country. No one in the United States should have to worry about having safe drinking water, said Chris Groh, executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Water Association, quote, but a town doesn't take care of itself. Over the last two decades, water systems in the 10 states bordering the Mississippi River violated U.S. Environmental Protection Agency regulations for drinking water more than 438,000 times. Okay, over the last two decades, water systems in the 10 states bordering the Mississippi River violated U.S. Environmental Protection Agency regulations for drinking water more than 438,000 times. That figure includes thousands of instances of heightened levels of harmful chemicals in water each year, nitrates and trihalomethanes and haloacetic acids, which have all been linked to various cancers and other health hazards, were top contaminants in the EPA's violation data in 2022. Nitrates are an indicator of agricultural runoff, common in rural areas, and trihalomethanes and haloacetic acids appear as byproducts of the water treatment process when chlorine reacts with organic contents. Addressing these issues can require expensive treatment technology, but in the last two decades, small and large utilities alike have reined in the number of violations. However, an Ag and Water Desk analysis of EPA Safe Drinking Water Act violation data nationwide found small water systems have been slower to reduce their violations than larger systems. And these violations only represented those reported. There could be many more incidences of unreported issues. In the 10 states along the Mississippi River, both small and large water systems saw increases in violations newly reported during 2022. For small water systems, that increase was more significant. That disparity is at least in part an indicator of the disadvantages facing small and rural systems, according to Jennifer Sloan Ziegler, a Mississippi-based engineer serving as vice president of the American Society of Civil Engineers Environmental and Water Resources Institute. This is something that concerns you. I would say you want to contact your congressperson or senator and let them know that this is something that you are concerned about, especially if you live in a rural area or a small town where fewer than 10,000 people are served by that water system. Stick around. Going to take a quick break. You're tuned in to your Civic Media radio station.
For local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. A Coast Guard official has just told CNN they're expanding the search for the lost Titanic tourist submersible into deeper waters. CBS's Chanel Call.
The small vessel vanished on Sunday. Rescuers are racing against time, hoping to find it in a remote part of the Atlantic.
Five people on board left with 96 hours worth of oxygen. There are more severe storms and intense heat in the forecast for parts of the South. Meteorologist Reynolds Wolf at the Weather Channel.
The heat is going to be just intense from San Angelo back to Del Rio, Austin, even into Houston and Corpus Christi. Just unbelievable heat, and we expect that heat to continue as we make way through much of the week.
President Biden addresses his administration's initiatives to address the climate crisis during a stop in coastal California.
The Department of Energy is going to announce that it's investing more than $2 billion to modernize our electric grid to be more climate resilient.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor.
Here's what you need to know in Western Wisconsin. Good morning, I'm Jimmy Cuska. One person is dead and two people are hurt after a UTV crash in Pepin County. The crash happened west of Durand in the town of Waterville around 9 o'clock Sunday night. 45-year-old Jessica Bignell of Arkansas was killed in the crash, while a 47-year-old man and 54-year-old man were hurt. The Pepin County Sheriff's Office said that the UTV hit a patch of gravel on County Road Z before overturning and noted that the roadway was closed for construction. A man accused of shooting multiple people in downtown La Crosse early Saturday morning is being held at the La Crosse County Jail on a $1 million cash bail, according to online court records. 31-year-old DeAndrew Grant is charged with six counts of reckless attempted homicide with the use of a dangerous weapon after La Crosse police said he fired a gun from a vehicle, shooting and injuring six people. And Hutchinson Technology in Eau Claire will lay off 50 additional employees as part of a layoff later this year. In March, the company announced 237 layoffs. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. Trained counselors are here to support anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. You can also contact 988 if you are concerned about someone. 988 is confidential and free to all Wisconsin residents. 988 24/7. Call, text, chat. Here to support you. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
Hello, Chippewa Valley and 93.5 The Tap listeners. Civic Media is thrilled to be your new neighbor and to celebrate our arrival, we have an exclusive offer just for you and your local business. Be one of the first 10 callers right now, and you'll receive 1 month of free advertising. That's right, 1 month of free advertising. This incredible offer ends June 30th. Boost your business and secure your free month of advertising right now. Call 608-949-8989. 608-949-8989. Call now.
Apple pie, fireworks, parades, red, white, and blue. Civic Media loves 4th of July, and we hope you do too. Would your business benefit from reaching hundreds of thousands of radio listeners? Show your American pride by helping sponsor radio promos, celebrating Independence Day, listing city fireworks displays, and honoring military veterans. If your business would like to be involved, email your name and phone number to info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation. When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements...
Oh yeah, don't you hear me crying? It's Howlin' Wolf on the radio on a Tuesday morning. Boy, if you don't know, I'm sure that my Grateful Dead fans who are listening right now know that that's a song that the Grateful Dead have been doing for many years and still continue to do to this day in their many different forms. Yes. Howlin' Wolf, celebrating his birthday today, by the way. That's why he's on the radio. And just before the break, we were discussing what's going on with the water systems in small towns around the country, rural areas. And one of the big issues is the fact that people who run these water systems in small towns and rural areas around the United States are way, way overworked and way, way underpaid. And we were checking out this story from USA Today Network, and we were discussing a gentleman from Luck, Wisconsin, named Seth Peterson, the guy in charge of the water there, and he decided to give up that job. It was just too much. He was working too hard and not getting paid enough. It says here that the working conditions that drove Peterson to leave his position in Luck, Wisconsin, are a trend reflected in small communities across the country. Quote, "I don't have a day off," said Nathan Taylor, lead operator of a small water plant in Wax, Kentucky. "The days he's not on duty, his phone is constantly ringing as issues come up at the plant," he said. Ziegler pointed out a water operator she knows nearby in the Mississippi Delta, whose responsibilities span four different water districts, which is a huge, huge area in quotation marks, she said. "Water system operators serve as a first line of defense for a community's public health and must have working knowledge of chemistry for licensing tests. Yet, operator pay in many small communities is about neck and neck with wages at the local McDonald's. Other trades like construction often pay far more. Now, if somebody's in charge of the water system that's supposed to be bringing you fresh water, and they have to go through licensing tests where they have to know about chemistry and how different chemicals react in the water and with the water, don't you think that they should be paid a little bit more than somebody flipping hamburgers at the McDonald's?" Here's a quote from Seth Peterson from Luck, Wisconsin. He says, "You can go swing a hammer for $25 an hour, and you can ice fish all winter." A workforce survey last year in Kentucky found water utilities in the state pay as low as $10 per hour for an entry-level position, with an average closer to $18. Excuse me, but 72% of managers reported losing staff to better pay in another job opportunity or other often larger utilities. The water workforce nationally is also aging overwhelmingly. 17 million workers are expected to leave the industry in the next decade, Ziegler said, and bringing young people into the profession has proven challenging. Quote, "We're losing people," she said, "and we're not getting them back." Widespread water workforce shortages make accessing infrastructure funding an even bigger task for small water systems' overworked staff, despite desperate needs. And the application process for federal funds often looks very similar in a village of 1,000 or a city of 500,000, according to Ziegler. "It is extremely extensive," she said, "not just the application, but the amount of background documentation that you have to provide them. It takes, I would say, months to get it together," end quote. Smaller systems are at an inherent disadvantage. Larger utilities with more ratepayers and bigger budgets often have experts on staff to go after competitive funding pots. Quote, "Their applications are shiny," Peterson said, "and they're written by someone with a master's degree," end quote. During his tenure as Director of Public Works, Peterson from Luck, Wisconsin, worked through the application process to access federal infrastructure funding for Luck's streets.
Even with help from a consultant and phone calls with the state, he described it as overwhelming. You don't even know where to begin, he said. Things are this far behind. Luck, Wisconsin, didn't get that money. And in cash-strapped communities, paying large sums for the help of consultants in applying for funding that isn't guaranteed is a big gamble. Quote, let's just be honest. If they can't afford to upgrade and maintain and operate their systems with the money they have, Ziegler said, do you think they have money left over to hire somebody, to pay somebody to put together this application? They don't. End quote. It says here, without sustained infrastructure funding, communities in turn face a rising water rate. In many rural areas, it's a bill that they can't afford. In Martin County, Kentucky, where communities are built along snaking creeks and between the rolling mountains of Appalachia, residents still don't trust the tap. Decades of water district mismanagement, including chronic reports of discolored water and burdensome service shutoffs, eventually culminated in a state takeover. In 2020, authorities shifted control to Alliance Water Resources, a private firm, hoping to get the county's water provisions on the right track. At the peak of the crisis, the system's aging water lines were leaking up to 90% of the water they were carrying, according to the estimates of Craig Miller, who now oversees the county's water operations as division manager for the firm. For Martin County, that meant tens of millions of gallons of water going to waste every month. In the years since the change in management, Martin County's water system has made progress. In a recent stakeholder workgroup meeting, Miller reported improvements in water loss, as well as new hires and licensing for staff. Quote, there's a good story here, Miller said in the meeting, but it's not over. Improvements came with a 24% rate increase effective last year, piling onto already steep prices. Okay, so 24% rate increase for people who are paying for the water. More than a fifth of Martin County lives below the poverty line, or according to recent census data. Quote, that's a huge burden on our poorest people, said Nina McCoy, an advocate with Martin County Concerned Citizens, in the work group meeting. She pointed out that local water rates are far higher than in wealthier Louisville, where median income is 50% higher than that of Martin County. The region's mountainous terrain piles onto water infrastructure challenges, said Lindell Ormsby, a professor of civil engineering at the University of Kentucky, who's paid close attention to the state's water system struggles. And as in many rural areas, there are miles of water lines for relatively few homes compared to cities like Louisville. In eastern Kentucky, many counties have historically relied on taxing the coal industry to fund water and other infrastructure needs. As the coal industry has declined, that funding has dried up, Ormsby said, turning the burden over to ratepayers. Even if systems are able to access one-time federal infrastructure funding, once it's spent, they'll return back to current levels of funding. In small communities, Ziegler said, that just won't be enough. Quote, they're serving less affluent areas. They're serving older populations on fixed incomes, Ziegler said, citing high rates of poverty in the rural and disadvantaged communities of her state of Mississippi. Their customers cannot afford to pay more. End quote. And water looks like it's going to be one of the big issues in the coming years and decades, especially if, as scientists tell us, the Earth is warming, climate change is happening, and the ground is becoming more dry, the air is becoming more humid. The water issues faced not only by small towns and rural communities, but also by the big cities. The water issues are just going to get worse. Speaking of water, here's one thing I want to get to. we talked about in the headlines. Judge orders removal of the Enbridge Line 5 pipeline from tribal lands within 3 years. And this is all about water. It's like trying to keep bad things from happening to water resources. This is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with the Dateline in Madison. It says a federal judge is giving a Canadian oil company 3 years to either reroute its pipeline that is currently on tribal land in northern Wisconsin or face a shutdown of a pipeline responsible for carrying hundreds of thousands of crude oil across the upper Midwest. Judge William Conley of the Western District of Wisconsin said that Enbridge Energy needed to speed up its reroute of Line 5 to remove the pipe from the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa land, an action which has already been 10 years in the making. Quote here, the court will give Enbridge an additional 3 years to complete a reroute. If Enbridge fails to do so, the 3 years will at least give the public and other affected market players time to adjust to a permanent closure of Line 5, wrote the judge Conley in the decision released late on Friday. Quote, at the expiration of 3 years from the date of this order, therefore, Enbridge must have decommissioned Line 5 on the 12 affected parcels, as well as arranged removal of any sidelined pipe and remediation of the area, end quote. Conley, the judge, said that evidence presented during a hearing in mid-May showed that the Bad River was eroding the banks near the pipeline on the reservation at a concerning rate, and that experts brought in by Enbridge did not do enough to assuage his fears of a leak. If Line 5 were not purged in time, a rupture at the meander could result in a release of as much as 20,000 barrels, which is 840,000 gallons or more of crude oil, the judge wrote in his opinion. Such a discharge would unquestionably be a substantial and unreasonable interference with the bans and the public's rights in light of the unpredictability of the Bad River and recent events. The court is simply no longer comfortable relying on Enbridge or its experts' attempts to quantify the likelihood of a risk of an exposure or pipeline rupture at the meander, end quote. Water is important stuff. Stay tuned. You're listening to your local Civic Media radio station.
All day I face the barren waste without the taste of water. Old Dan and I, with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water. Cool, clear water. The nights are cool and I'm a fool. Each star's a pool of water. And with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and carry on to water. Cool, clear water.
Look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite, and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trygve Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
We have a sunny, warm week coming up this week. In fact, we're not expecting to see much in the way of rain until at least Saturday night, possibly into Sunday. Today, mostly sunny. We'll get to about 89 for a high this afternoon. The wind southeast at 5 to 15. Basically the same each day this week. 61 clear tonight, 90 tomorrow, 88 on Thursday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 71.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Boulders of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed unto the sun till we found the sea of green. And we lived beneath the waves in our yellow.
Yeah, everybody, sing along. It's the Beatles on a Tuesday morning, singing about the Yellow Submarine. And you probably heard by now about the missing submersible, right? The one where people were going down to the bottom of the ocean to have a look at the Titanic on the bottom of the sea. I got an update here from 10 minutes ago from the New York Times. It says, rescuers race to find the missing crew near the Titanic wreck as air supply dwindles. A submersible with five people on board went missing in the North Atlantic on Sunday and has only a few days worth of life support. The U.S. Coast Guard was racing against time on Tuesday, today, and facing a host of extreme logistical challenges, including crushing pressure deep below the ocean, to find a deep-diving submersible and its five-person crew in the North Atlantic. The submersible, called the Titan, has been in the area to explore the wreck of the Titanic when it lost contact on Sunday morning with a chartered research ship at the dive site. At the time, the 22-foot-long vessel was more than halfway into what should have been a two-and-a-half-hour dive. The submersible is thought to be equipped with only a few days' worth of oxygen. Rear Admiral John Mauger of the U.S. Coast Guard said Tuesday morning, that was this morning, that an area about the size of Connecticut has been searched so far. In an interview with Good Morning America, he said search capabilities were also being expanded to be able to look under the water, even if the Titan can be located in a remote patch of ocean where the seafloor lies more than 2 miles below the choppy surface. Retrieving it will not be easy. That's partly because even the best divers
cannot safely go more than a few hundred feet below the surface. To recover objects off the seafloor, the U.S. Navy uses a remote-operated vehicle that can reach depths of 20,000 feet. But ships that carry such a vehicle normally move no faster than about 20 miles per hour, and the Titanic wreck lies about 370 miles off the coast of Newfoundland, Canada. And says here, here's what we know so far. These are like bullet points. Four of the five people in the craft have been identified so far. They are Hamish Harding, a British businessman and explorer, the Pakistani businessman Shahzada Dawood and his son Suleiman, and Paul Henry Nargolet, a French maritime expert who has been on over 35 dives to the Titanic wreck site. Also, the Titan submersible is operated by OceanGate Expeditions, a company that has provided tours of the Titanic wreck since 2021 for a price of up to $250,000 per person as part of a booming high-risk travel industry. And somewhere I read that the people that are on board right now paid $150,000 per person to go on this trip. It goes on here and says OceanGate has described the trip on its website as a, quote, thrilling and unique travel experience. In this case, maybe a little too thrilling. The next bullet point says the people involved in this marine disaster had been drawn to the area by an earlier one. They were headed to the site where the Titanic, a giant steamship, sunk in 1912 after hitting an iceberg while sailing to New York from Britain on its first voyage, killing about 1,500 people. For explorers, the Titanic was the holy grail of shipwrecks until it was discovered on the seafloor in 1985. Even now, the level of public interest in the tragedy and pernicious misinformation about it remains very high. Many other details, why the submersible lost contact with the research vessel and whether it is capable of transmitting a distress signal, were not clear as of early Tuesday morning. So are they going to find it? Will they find it? What if they never find it? I don't know. It's a mystery. It's a mysterious story, that's for sure. Keeping in mind that the pressure of the ocean at those depths is crushing. So even if they were able to find where the submersible is, and it might take them a long time to get it out. Imagine being on that craft, that submersible. Of course, if they lost power, it's going to be dark, no fresh air moving around. I don't know. I think that would be pretty darn scary. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. Everybody stick around. You're tuned in to your Civic Media radio station.
Oh,
look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition: wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep-fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite, and where do you get your squeaky or deep-fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 1-